I didn't think that I was going to be diagnosed with everything in the book. So I just stopped eating to the point where I was throwing up blood. A lot of people in my family had that kind of background. And a lot of people were pressuring me to have this sort of physical image, and they didn't care about how I was like thinking or my grades and things of that nature. And it was hard.
Hi, welcome back to The Mindful Space. Today we have Danielle Rule with us, and I'm very excited.
I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for coming.
No,
welcome to Florida. I've heard today was rough.
No, today was awesome. I just got a little burnt.
It happens. You definitely have to bring protection to Florida. Well, you forgot about that.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to jump right into it. I'm sure everybody knows you, but for those who don't, do you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, so it's weird that this is a hard question now. So my name's Danielle Rule. What most people know me as is like, hey, I'm Danielle Rule from Love is Blind. But it's like, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a friend, and now a mental health advocate. I've always, you know, been that in a close group of people. So it's cool to be able to, you know, call myself that, but it, all of this stuff is still kind of weird. Mm-hmm. I struggle with mental health, but it's so weird that most of the time I introduce myself, it's just Danielle Rule from Love is Blind. And that's not what I want to be known for.
What do you want to be known for?
The other things I mentioned, you know, like I am a daughter. I am a good friend. I am good at my career, and I do care a lot about mental health, my own, everyone else's, and not the Love is Blind stuff.
Well, let's clear that up today.
Let's go.
What is your career? What do you do?
I work in advertising.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. How long have you been doing that?
Since I graduated, I studied advertising, and I think that's the other thing, like, based on the persona that was portrayed, a lot of people are like, she's dumb because she has fun. How did Nick marry someone like this when he seems intelligent? I'm like, I have worked my entire life for my career from high school up until right now, and I'm proud of it. But people don't necessarily think about that because I wear costumes. Yes, I love costumes.
Yeah.
Yes, like, I dance on tables. But I also am a successful person.
Exactly. And it's hard to portray that once you're out in the media. You feel like they put you, not they put you down, but they put your persona as something that you're not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's something that is hard because at first I was overly trying to express who I was because I was so disappointed in how people perceived me because it wasn't accurate. And yeah, part of it was, but there's a 360 version of every single person in the world, and they saw the worst of me. And so I was like over like, no, that's not me. That's not me. And I'm just like, you know what? Who cares? I know who I am. The people close to me know who I am.
Yeah.
The community that I've been able to get close with based on the show know who I am. And, you know, I have to focus on the fact that that's what's important.
Yeah. So you got the pros and cons. We'll get to that later. In your early journey, how was your mental health? How was your relationship with mental health?
Yeah, it's weird because I didn't start thinking about mental health until other people started talking to me about their experiences. And then that was when I was like, wow, that kind of relates to me. And that's when I finally got a therapist in college. And it was like, okay, that's why I felt that way. And so there were certain instances that had happened throughout my life that I didn't understand why I felt that way. For example, I wrote my first suicide letter when I was 8 years old.
About eight.
Yeah. Yeah. And I ran away from home and I stood in the middle of, I still remember Ogden Avenue, which was one of the busiest streets in Downers Grove where I grew up. And I was like, why? You know, at the moment I was like, I don't know why I did it. And it wasn't till I was older that I looked back in all of these, all of these different things in which I acted or how I perceived myself in the world. It didn't make sense until I kind of like learned about these things or, you know, understood who I was and why I felt that way. And I wish, and that's kind of like one of the reasons that I talk about it is I grew up hating myself so much, but it was mainly because of the fact of the way that I felt inside, not thinking that anyone else felt that. And in college, I finally came to the conclusion where it's like, oh my God, I wish I would have known that when I was 8, because maybe I wouldn't have had that self-loathing, because a lot of it did generate from how I felt inside, not just like, you know, how I looked physically, even though that's what a lot of people think, like, oh, she hates herself or is so self-loathing because of her appearance. I'm like, it's a lot more deep-rooted than that. And I was too scared to tell people that, not only in my close life, but obviously to the entire world. And so I'm grateful for, like, you know, having the courage now to be able to talk about that.
Yeah. And what was your main issue when you were younger? Once you got to college, you realized what was going on when you were younger?
I think there's so many different things that led up to how I recognized, like, why I felt that way. And of course, one, like, I really do genuinely believe that there's a chemical imbalance, right? Like, when I was 8, I was fine. One thing I actually just remembered today before coming on the show, and I was like, wow, it was an epiphany. Okay. I completely forgot this was a part of my life. So when I was young, about that age, actually a little bit younger, my mom put me into modeling. And my mom was a model. My grandma was a model. So my mom was like, oh, you know, she looks like Shirley Temple. I was a cute little kid. Not going to lie about that. So I would go to sleep every single night wearing curlers in my hair. And we would, after kindergarten, go to on a train to Chicago, and you go to these go-sees. And I remember doing a training where they were like trying to teach me how to smile, and I wouldn't get it right. And even then I was like, it's weird that I literally have these flashbacks and I can still remember it. And there's a couple of things where I did, you know, get accepted for, like I was in a Libby Lou ad and I thought that was so cool, but 99% of the time you're not. And so my mom just stopped me from doing it because I wouldn't get them. And I think part of that actually, like, is one of the things that sent me into feeling the way that I did. And that's what's weird about, like, going to therapy or, you know, trying to digest what happened in your childhood to make you feel the way that you do. And I'm not kidding. Today I came to that conclusion where I'm like, wow, I had that kind of rejection so young that I already blamed myself for not being accepted in certain ways.
Yeah. And how long did that last?
Only a year. Like, until I was, like, out of kindergarten. I think that once my brother and sister came along, I started to, like, and that's totally fine. But I was like, oh, I'm in the back burner. Okay. And then I, like, also blamed myself for feeling like I was on the back burner. And so I, you know, started going to food instead of that. And because my brother and sister were athletic, I wasn't. Okay. So I was kind of like gravitating to like that versus like, I don't know, I just like really felt like I wasn't loved anymore. Okay. Solely because I was the center of attention. And, you know, when you're a little child, sometimes that happens.
Yeah. No, that's completely normal. So you were a little depressed when you were younger, and that's what you're referring to, the chemical imbalance, but you never went to seek help until you were in college.
So my parents actually, after my initial 8-year-old experience, put me in one, because it was like they literally had to. It was less of them thinking that I had an issue because I had a good life. And I don't know how they thought in their heads, right? Like, I actually never asked them, but I went to one therapy session and that was it. And I still, I'm like, I don't know, you know, they had me draw a picture and that was it. And I never really thought about it since then.
They just told your parents you were fine and that's it.
They're like, oh yeah, just come to this and draw a picture and you're good.
Okay. And then after that, it transitioned into body image. And you mentioned a few times that you lost a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. How was that experience? That was through high school, through middle school?
So, no. So through grade school, middle school, and high school, and I'm not trying to be like, well, it was me, but because I felt like I was left out from the family, again, they were beautiful, right? And they were succeeding in certain things that I was unable to do. Like, I have no coordination, right? And so I do pride myself in my intelligence, but that wasn't something that my family cared about. Okay. Again, like, my mom was a model, my dad was an athlete. not pro, not a huge amount of help. Anyways.
But still. So, yeah.
That's but it what does, they praised. Like, yeah. Okay. And it was interesting because I'm not even talking about my immediate family, but a lot of people in my family had that kind of background. And a lot of people were pressuring me to have this sort of physical image, and they didn't care about how I was like thinking or my grades and things of that nature. And it was hard. Like, I remember flying out to my grandparents' house, it was a moment, you know, and they were like, a moment on your lips, forever on your hips. And I would get told that like nonstop, but I'd go home and I'd eat chips after like grade school because I'm like, okay, they're never going to understand how I'm feeling because they're like this. And I would go on a diet even as a kid. And I would go like a day without eating and be like, oh, I'm going to become skinny overnight. And it didn't happen. So I would keep doing it because I felt defeated, thinking that nothing I was doing was working. And so that kind of escalated until college. Okay. And it was my freshman year when we were going through sorority recruitment. And I became like really close to the girls on my floor, but they were all beautiful. And one of them was my high school best friend. And going through recruitment, you think that you're having these great conversations. And I was trying to brag about everything in my life to overcompensate for being heavier than most of the people that were going through recruitment. And you get a list of sororities back, and all of my friends would get certain houses and I wouldn't. And I was like, I know that this is why. And I actually got accepted to one because of the fact that there was another childhood friend that was in it, and they pushed for me. And that's when I like looked around, like I was like, I know why they chose me for this one, because the girls were my hometown. And that's when I was like, I don't belong here. And so I like worked my ass off to make me feel like I belonged. And that's when I started like not eating and overly working out because I wanted to feel like I belonged. And I finally did. And then people in the sorority were like, oh, you look so good. And that was the first time that like guys would give attention to me. Mm-hmm. And even other girls would give attention to me that were in the other houses that I felt like clearly I didn't belong in, because even my own friend group, my best friends who could care less, who were in top houses, I was like too scared to even hang out with them anymore because I thought I was going to judge by them. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to judge by my own sorority. Okay. And so like I would work out twice a day. I would, every time that I would accidentally like grab food that I knew I shouldn't eat, I would literally spray it with Windex. And I had markers on my mirror that said, you are fat. And I remember someone else came in and was like, Danielle, take that off your mirror. But I was like, no, I need to lose weight. And they're like, no, you don't. Because I was like, looking back, I was like very thin at the time. Mm-hmm. But I would like literally spray my food with
Windex.
Yeah.
So then you would know not I just to eat it.
No, because I would bring it up from my room. Like from the kitchen to my room, and I would look at the mirror, and then I'm like, okay, and I would spray it, and then I would throw it away. And that's how I like dealt with trying to like lose weight, is like, well, I would literally just spray it with the spray I had in my room. And I'm like, I'm not gonna eat that. It's gonna taste like Windex.
And that's what led to, you mentioned throwing up blood at one point.
So throwing up blood wasn't because I was bulimic. Throwing up blood was because I was under eating and I would still drink. And so the next day, like I don't know why, like, I don't know, I didn't Google it, but I would start throwing up blood because I had nothing else in my system. And it would start with like, you know, just the stomach acid, but it got to the point where it turned into throwing up blood. And again, like, I don't know the science behind it, but that would just be
You never thought about going to the doctor?
No.
Do you feel like maybe inside you knew that something was wrong, and that's why you didn't go to the doctor? When you were going, well, it's safe to say that you had an unhealthy relationship with food.
I'll be straight up. I had an eating disorder. Yeah.
Was that ever diagnosed at all? Did you ever recognize to yourself that you had a disorder? Did that cross your mind?
No, not until probably like a couple years later when I was talking to my first psychiatrist and she quote unquote diagnosed me with that. I'm like, what? And then I came to the realization a couple of years after, because I think like in the moment, you might not want to believe what someone's saying. And then a couple years later, when you're quote unquote better, no one's ever like 100% better. That's when you come to the conclusion where it's like, I did. Yeah. And now I know I did. But in the moment, I was like, no, I don't.
Was it something common that you might have seen amongst your friends or in the university that maybe, or maybe was it stigma or taboo was not talked about?
So this is, and I'm not going to name specific names, but I think it stemmed from different things in my family. I think that there have been multiple people in my family who have had eating disorders.
Okay.
And I didn't think about it when they did, because I like that's when I was overeating.
Yeah.
And again, like looking back, I was like, okay, they did, you know, and that's how they stay skinny. So that's what I have to do. Yeah.
So that's what you saw in your family.
Yeah.
It made you to believe that it was something normal when
Even
you were
my
doing
extended
it.
Family. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Do you think in part, well, you mentioned they were in modeling athletes, so they were all into the physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you saw a lot of,
lot
of that. Okay. How did, after college, you get better with the help of a therapist, right? And mm-hmm. then you're in the show. The show.
Yes.
How did that impact your mental health? And we can talk about both the positive, mentioning now you have a network of people that you might not have if you wouldn't have gone to that show, mm-hmm. but the negative as well. How did it impact overall? Did your body image insecurity come back? How was that experience?
So I think one of the things that people like, again, I've spoken about how my mental health kind of deteriorated in that aspect. And again, there's always a wave, right? Like in the beginning, during, then it was like fine again. It's never going to be like 100%. And so I don't think that people recognize that during the filming process, there are certain things that negatively impact your mental health. And for my specific example, when you're doing an interview, there's someone who is saying like, you know, how do you feel about yourself? Do you think it's going to be hard, like finding someone who lost this weight? Do you think that someone's going to stay with you because they think that you're going to gain it again? Do you think your insecurities are going to scare someone away? Do you think that this, and again, I haven't talked about specific traumas, but there are certain things that had happened in my past that they knew. Okay. And they would talk about that over and over and over again. So during the filming process, I actually gained 20 pounds because sometimes when I'm like super depressed, I still turn to food, right? And so during that time period, it's still hard. And that's something that people don't necessarily think about because they don't see it. And then after the filming process, I was just like, I feel like a shell who's someone that's watching my life from afar and not actually living it. And that gave me anxiety. And so I lost a shit ton of weight.
After
the filming process. And because it's like, okay, I'm married now. I'm still depressed. No one understands why I'm depressed because anyone, you know, would be grateful for the experience that I went through because they don't necessarily understand what goes on behind the scenes. And that was a different layer. And then the show airs. And that was a different level of hate that I ever thought I would get. I thought people were going to say this. I didn't think that I was going to be diagnosed with everything in the book because I did have a panic attack. Yeah. And the panic attack was me realizing, well, so in the pods, the cameras are all hidden. And so you can be your authentic self. And then we get to Mexico, and that's when the cameras are in your face. There's lights everywhere, and they're following you around. I'm like, I don't think that I can mentally handle this. And I didn't come to that conclusion until one of the first nights in Mexico. And so I did have, you know, a panic attack.
Yeah.
And they made it seem like it was a reason that it, you know, wasn't. And I was begging to leave the show and they didn't let me. And that just kind of like, you know.
I was going to ask that because if you realize at whatever point that it wasn't for you,
mm-hmm.
couldn't you just leave?
Nope.
Okay.
You can't. So again, like I wanted to so badly. And I think that that's again why it spiraled. But the positive of that was other people seeing that, relating to it. It's like, I've never seen, you know, someone have a panic attack on TV. And I was like, I wish it wasn't aired. I wish it wasn't misinterpreted. But now I don't care because other people are like, I'm glad I saw that.
Yeah, let's talk about the reality of a panic attack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what kind, well, the support that you got was both negative and positive. Your experience overall, would you say it was positive or negative for your mental health?
I mean, at first it was negative. I was in a place that I don't even want to describe. But after talking about that and how I was feeling, the amount of people who, you know, talked to me and helped me feel not alone. Because there are certain like emotions that no matter how much I talk about it with my friends or, you know, a therapist, there are things where I'm like, Dana, why do you feel like this? And other people coming to me literally genuinely helped me. And I think that's one thing that people don't recognize. It's like,
yeah,
you know, all of the people that come to me, like all of my followers, my fans, I call them virtual friends because they are, like literally have changed my life. And now it's such a positive experience. Like in the moment, I wouldn't have thought that. But now I'm like, that is the benefit of going on that, because there's so many different emotions that I didn't know other people felt.
Yes. The fact that you now know people that have also gone through what you've experienced, yes, it just makes it a lot. You don't feel alone, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, you changed my life. You make me feel not alone. I'm like, you are changing my life. Yeah. You make me feel like I'm not alone. And I want to like scream that from the rooftops.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. Sometimes when we're in a dark spot, we're not able to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But I'm glad that you're here and that you're seeing now, and that you're taking your followers or your reach and your platforms to advocate for mental health, you know, from personal experience and hopefully to help others.
Yeah, you know.
What are some of the strategies or coping mechanisms that helped you get through the difficult times?
So for one, there's no perfect answer for that. Okay. It depends on my mood and it depends on my level of anxiety or my level of depression. So I have to sometimes like reread the things that I wrote down. And so when I am in a good place, I write down the things that helped me get there. And I reread that and I start practicing them again. I think another thing is communicating with other people. Sometimes when you're, you know, in that mindset, you might not want to for a multitude of different reasons. You might be embarrassed that you feel that way. You might not want to be a burden to other people and you don't want people like texting you nonstop like, oh my God, how are you doing? Because sometimes that can make you feel worse because it's like, I don't want someone worrying about me. So what I do is I write down, you know, how I'm feeling every day, because then you can see the growth or you can see some of the like the repetition of certain situations where like, okay, yeah, I was feeling great, but now I'm not. And what are like the consistencies in this? And then that's why it kind of brought me into journaling and as you had mentioned, songwriting, because every time that I write something down, I think metaphorically. And it's weird. Like one time I was like very depressed about a breakup and I smelled his cologne in an elevator of a coworker. And I immediately started writing it down and it just happened to like become form in a song. And that's why I started writing songs, is because that's literally just the way that I write things down. And so I started recording them because even when I started writing my lyrics down, there was a lot of people who had like written to me, I feel the same. This really resonated with me. And so I'm like, okay, I can share this more broadly. And so I started recording different things about the way that I felt. And, you know, you're going to get hate for that. What, you know,
you're going to get hate for anything.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Especially a song. But anyways, like, I mean, at the end of the day, the amount of people who did say, even the song changed my life. There was someone who messaged me saying, I was crying and I was able to put makeup on because I listened to this. Or someone who's like, every time I feel low, this is what I listen to. And that alone is what made me want to, you know, continue to record. And even though if I'm recording or not, I still want to share what I write down because of like the amount of people who have said things like that.
And it's also very therapeutic for yourself. So like, who cares what people say?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
and if it can have benefits for yourself and others, then why not?
Like, oh, I have like a 8 million page book of all of them that I've written, you know? So yeah, it's very therapeutic.
Well, maybe that's your next step. Songwriting, singing.
Oh, I always
You're gonna sing something for us today?
No.
You're
nervous. I get nervous. No.
I just write the songs. Oh, my God. Well, it's undeniable that you've been through a difficult journey through the show, but you came out, right? Great. Mm-hmm. I know another thing that happened to you last year was the divorce, the separation. Mm-hmm. I know that must have been tough.
Oh, yeah.
But we want to hear from you. How was your experience and how did you overcome?
It's like there are so many different things that – so one, a breakup's hard, right?
They suck.
Two, a divorce is hard because you genuinely think that you're going to spend the rest of your life with this person. And we met in an unconventional way, and there were certain things that we didn't necessarily talk about until after, you know, we decided mm-hmm. to split. And then, you know, being really sad about that because you genuinely did, you did feel that way in a certain time period. And then not only being really sad about that, everyone having an opinion. And that like even the people who were talking to me saying like, oh, he's this. Yeah. Or the people saying, she's this. And I remember even like going out, people would come up to me like, oh, good for you. And I'm like, I don't want to hear that. I don't want that to be a thing. Like, yeah. And one thing that I thought was interesting is that I was really sad that no one reached out to me. And like certain family members, certain okay. friends. And I didn't tell them though. I just like, because it was so publicized, there, I just assumed every single person in my life knew. And so one, I remember meeting up with a friend who was like, how's Nick? And I'm like, we got divorced. And she was like, wait, what? And I just like assumed that every single person in my life, and then other people were like, there was like, you didn't tell us, so we didn't know if you wanted to talk about it.
Okay.
So I'm like, wow. Like my grandma found out about it when she doesn't even have cable. Watching TV. And then I felt terrible. I was like, I didn't even tell my grandma, who I'm super close with. So that's an additional layer. But again, it's just like, one, people message you being like, he's dating this person, she's dating this person, and half of it can be fabricated. Oh, he was cheating on you the entire time. I'm like, that can't be true. But it kind of like gets in the back of your mind. So there's so many different, you know, aspects of getting divorced in, you know, in a global level.
Yeah, exactly. It's already a big thing when you're not a celebrity. Yeah. And nobody cares about your divorce. And then there's another level when you've been on the show and everybody just wants to know or not know. Yeah, I can only imagine.
We shared a dog and a cat. Like, oh my gosh, I remember the last time leaving and I still envision the way that Grayson would greet me when I would walk in the door. You know, I was like, oh, if I ever see him again, if we're ever friends. And that's also like something that's just like a, you know, it's like a normal divorce thing. It's like, you know, I miss them. But if I said that I missed him, people would be like, get over it.
Do you feel that if you guys would have met outside of the show and the unconventional way that you mentioned meeting him, it would have last a little bit longer, it would have been different? Have you guys even been married?
You know, that's a question I ask myself a lot, because when you think about season one and how the couples are still together, they had 3 years until it aired. And so part of me is thinking like, okay, before your life just flips upside down, you have the time to, you know, so for example, okay, you go on a reality TV show, mm-hmm. 10 days you're engaged, 8 weeks you're married. Couple months after the TV show, like that's
insane.
A lot of
I can't life imagine.
Changing. Yeah, it's a bunch of life changing events in like a short period of time. Mm-hmm. So it's like the amount of stress and the way that people deal with stress. You know, you don't. You know, it's just like sometimes I think like if we had the time to get to know each other more without all of the added pressure, maybe. But also there were some like very fundamental things that we had different viewpoints on, like certain medications or, you know, things like that, where it's like it's like, fine to have different viewpoints. But I'm like, okay, like having kids. So like that's, again, I teeter totter because sometimes I do wish, you know, we like I always say, if we met dating,
outside
it would have been different.
Show, yeah.
But then I'm also like, would it have been? I don't know. You know,
would you even have met him?
I don't think we would have met, but I'm so glad I did.
Okay.
You know, like he's someone who I'm so happy I met. I know if I did get to know him, it would have gotten to that place, but I don't know if it would have ended in marriage.
Yeah. Do you guys keep any type of relationship nowadays? Was it a bad divorce?
At first it was pretty bad. We broke up over a text message. I was trying to get in contact with him, but he literally ghosted me. And I was trying to figure out like very specific things, such as like, okay, I have to change the, car into my name. And he wouldn't even give me his address to do that. And so it was very difficult. The divorce process was delayed. I was trying to have a conversation before we had divorced. I'm like, do we want to do this? And he just, again, disappeared. And, that's one of his coping strategies, but he never kind of returned. And so he actually recently sent me a drunk text that was very nice. But it was a drunk text. But I was like, okay.
But wait, drunk people say the truth, right?
No, and it was very nice. And I'm like, okay. Finally, at least some sort of message. And I, my family's still close with him. He still talks to my sister, which makes me happy. I mean, he was so close with my family.
Okay.
And, I don't, I'm happy that is still a relationship that he has.
I mean, I feel that my thought is that you can get the good and the bad from any relationship. I don't know if anything's meant to last forever, right? But whatever lasts, at one point, is what you chose, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make sense to end a relationship and just bash on each other, talk crap. Like, no, at one point, I was your option, you were my option. So let's respect whatever we had and just move on and
so
wish you the best.
That was an issue that we actually, it's a lot of people probably know this. because, we weren't communicating one-to-one, we would be communicating over Instagram stories because we knew that each other would see that. But also, it would, get picked up in the media every time.
Yeah.
And so, thinking back to them, that is so immature that we are literally talking to each other through Instagram stories that we know the other person would see even though we're blocked. Fans would send me what he was saying and vice versa. And I think back to that, I'm like, oh, my God, what were you thinking, Danielle? Jeez Louise.
Did you guys ever seek couples therapy?
Yes. We did do couples therapy. And this is, something that I think is important. So we were, going to couples therapy because, one, we were pretty afraid as to how the show would impact us. It did. So we continued, and then we'd sit there. And we were, perfect, quote, unquote. So we'd have nothing to talk about. So we stopped. And I think that's something that we obviously should have continued, even if you think your relationship is well, even if I have nothing to say to my therapist, it's like, hey, what's up? And he would still, have me bring things out. But, even if you don't think times are hard, you should continue with that because then when things do get hard again, you're like, I'm defeated. This isn't going to work again.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Now, we mentioned before, you use all your platforms now to advocate for mental health, and I think that's wonderful. What is your next step in regards to your plans? What do you plan to do? I mean, you're still doing your career, right?
Yes.
What about the advocacy for mental health? Do you have any future plans?
So I am, one, going to continue on with my career, and it's interesting, even in that aspect, they thanked me. So I did take a four-week leave of absence from work, and I'm pretty transparent about that with my own company. And it was weird that one of my bosses and HR thanked me for doing that and being open about talking about it. And so that's why I'm like, even if I'm openly talking about it on Instagram, it doesn't mean that I'm not on other places where, it's a big company. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard because I'm not an influencer. I don't know how to create content, right? So it's not me trying to do that for the most part. I just want to talk about my experiences or how I feel because, and I always like to preface this, I'm not a therapist. I don't know how to help myself sometimes. So I just am going to continue to, in any form possible, whether it be just, my own platform or any platform that will take me, talk about what I'm going through.
Yeah. So sometimes that's all it takes. That's why I like having these conversations with different people, from therapists to reality show
I don't stars. Know what to tell people.
Just I just feel that just the talking just breaks the stigma, and people that do listen eventually feel heard, and like you, they feel that they have also gone through the same things and they can really connect, you know?
Yeah.
And if you look back in the days, nobody really talked about it.
Yeah.
I feel like now everybody keeps bringing it up, yeah, which is a good thing. What advice would you give someone that's struggling right now, either through depression or anxiety or a divorce, anything?
One thing, so the thing that helped me the most is being open about it. Again, throughout my life, once I realized what I was going through, also the people in college who talked to me about what they were going through. But one of the things that I learned through communicating with the new community, like the new community that I've been able to connect with, there's people who don't have people to talk to. And that's what's difficult. It's like, again, like me being open, me having a therapist, but there's people who don't have access to that.
Exactly.
And I think that's something that's been very difficult for me to try and like mentally handle myself. It gets to me where I'm like, I don't have advice for everyone. I can talk about what has benefited me. For example, like mindfulness, like meditating, having like writing down three things that, you know, taking a bath sometimes can, you know, just distract me from the way I'm feeling. Sometimes it's holding ice. Sometimes I have Silly Putty in my purse to, you know, distract me from things. But that's, you know, it might work for some people. It might not. And so that's, again, like sometimes and I feel like a fraud because it's like being a mental health advocate when you still don't always feel right. And sometimes I feel better and all I can do is talk about how I feel and my own experiences. But it's really hard to give advice sometimes, you know, because then people are like, they do come to me. And there are certain people who will message me because they don't have anyone else and because they've seen what I've communicated and because I'm open about it. And they'll be like, how do I tell my family? Who do I tell? And I'm like, I wish I could say something because I am lucky to have, you know, the different things that I do. So it's like, oh man. And I feel bad to even answer it like that, you know? And like, there's times where there's people reaching out to me and I'm just like, I am feeling so low and I'm a mental health advocate and I am trying to give advice. So you feel fraudulent. It adds like an extra pressure on your own mental health, but I'm happy, you know, I'm just like, oh my God, I can't wait till I get back into it. But
you have to remember that being a mental health advocate or even therapist, it does not mean your life is always going to be all together. You're just a human being. Like that can happen to anyone, even a professional, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're trained to go into the room with therapist hat and leave your problems outside of the office. But again, we're human. So don't ever feel that if you're having a bad day, you still... Don't feel that if you're having a bad day, you're just being like a fake person.
I remind myself that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that.
It's not. They go to you because they want someone real. Maybe they don't want a therapist. They want somebody to
just have, vent
to. Like, yeah,
because
I had a
no
mental,
one else. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a mental breakdown yesterday. How's yours today? Cool. Let's talk about it.
And that's like, I feel like my position as being a mental health advocate, if that's what you want to call it, is just me being transparent about how I'm feeling. And that's all I know how to do, right? Like, again, I'm not an influencer. I'm not going to try to be. I like talking about my feelings. So that's what I'm going to continue to do, like I am now. But I mean, and I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that people share their stories with me. And I message everyone back.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Because it's like, oh, if they have no one else to talk to, like, and again, like, it's not only because they have no one, like, it helps me. It's like, if someone is watching something that I say and it relates to them and then I see it, I'm like, oh my God, that's me too. But I will say that I have friends who have actually like genuinely benefited from the suicide hotline. And it's interesting because it wasn't even because they were in that space. It was because they didn't have the insurance to find a therapist, and they can talk you through so many different things, which people don't like. Even if you have a friend that's experiencing that, like I did, like, and her boyfriend was going through, you know, suicidal thoughts and things of that nature. And she called them and, you know, they talked her through how, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So that's one thing I actually want to bring to surface is the fact that there's
resources.
A lot more to like even the suicide hotline than just like, you know, talking to yourself when you're in the lowest place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just the platforms. There are resources out there. There's community health centers. There's groups.
I love group therapy. I mean, like, I might be a full of one, but I love, this is like, yeah. I love group therapy. Yeah.
Well, groups are very strong because of the same reason that you're talking about. You get to meet people. That's why the AAs are still existent. Yep. Group therapies and medical settings and everywhere. Yeah. So. Yay. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you.
Clearly, I was hyped up.
You're like, wait, it's done?
Like, I'll keep going.
Yeah. We might have to bring you back. But no, I want to say thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing your story. You know, we've all gone through struggles. And like you said, it's a work in progress, right? You have your ups and downs. And as long as you have your therapist and resources and your great fans and followers, sure you'll be.
I mean, it's changed my life.
And now you have Miami, so
I'll be great.
Enjoy.
No, but thank you so much for having me. It was nice talking about this stuff.
Thank you guys for watching or listening. Don't forget to leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Subscribe, and I'll see you next week. Bye. Good.
It's a wrap.